As you've been hearing on Morning Additional, morning, the death toll is now 11 following the capsizing of the Costa Concordia cruise liner off the coast of Italy Friday, with two dozen people still missing. They've suspended the search for today. And one of the 4,200 passengers aboard the ship when it ran aground was Lauren Moore of Bowling Green. She escaped unharmed, and Lauren joins us now live in our studio. Lauren, thank you so much for coming in this morning. I appreciate it. I said Lauren Moore escaped unharmed. Are you unharmed?
I think so. Uninjured, yes.
Physically, anyway.
Physically, we are perfect. We will probably all be dealing with the aftermath of this tragedy for quite some time. So those scars, we'll find out later.
I'm sure. What happened? Where were you when the ship ran aground, and what would that feel like?
Sure. We were actually all having dinner when it initially happened. We were on the third deck, the third floor, and suddenly we heard the loud sound, which we now know was the initial impact of us hitting the rock. And
what did that sound like?
Someone actually made the comment to the effect of, was that an engine blowing? It was just this really loud shuddering sound. And all of a sudden, all the plates and the glasses just started hitting the ground and shattering. And the boat started leaning to the side. And everyone just started getting up and running away. And that's when the chaos just started setting in. And everyone knew this wasn't a normal situation.
What did you and your friends do?
My friend and I ran back to our cabin. We changed clothes, and I grabbed a cell phone, and I grabbed my wallet, and we grabbed our life vests, and we just started running to the lifeboats.
Which maybe sounds easier than I imagine it was.
It sounds easy.
You're battling crowds and people running every which way.
Yeah, there was no lights on. It was dark, and the ship at that point was tilted so drastically that it was making me seasick. It was a nauseating feeling. And we actually had no idea where the lifeboats were, because at that point we had yet to have the emergency drill. So we just started running, and we just started running down the stairs thinking at some point we'll see a sign, we'll see people. I don't know why we just started running. And eventually we hit the deck where the lifeboats were, and that's where the pandemonium was, the chaos of people. And that's when I realized, oh my goodness, this is serious. This is a situation. This was not the electrical
blowing
problem that they had been saying overhead. And
is that what they were saying? Just an electrical problem?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody believed that.
When the ship started leaning so badly, you just couldn't believe any longer that they would have this massive ship straightened up anymore.
How did you manage to get onto the lifeboat itself?
That was probably the scariest part of the whole ordeal we experienced. We were lucky to be able to find a spot on one of the lifeboats, and we climbed onto one and just hung on for dear life and just sat there as they used that pulley system to get us down. And suddenly it was just terrifying. The pulley system would just drop suddenly 5 feet, and you just didn't know if it would ever stop. Are we going to hit the ocean suddenly? Is this boat going to break? Is the pulley system going to break? And people were screaming and shoving and pushing and struggling to get on. And it was a scene right out of a movie.
Newsweek magazine is out with their annual ranking of the best high schools in the country, and the Gatton Academy for Math and Science at Western Kentucky University tops the list. The Academy's executive director, Dr. Julia Roberts, joins us live now in the studio to discuss then, what's it like to be one of the leaders of the best high school in America?
I think it is so wonderful for Kentucky to be celebrating academic excellence. It's been a goal of my career, and I think that it's exciting to be on top.
Last year, the Gatton Academy was ranked fifth on the Newsweek list. Now they're number one. Why the change in 1 year up to number one?
I think one of the things that's made the difference is that we had to get the people at Newsweek to see that, in addition to counting AP classes, the Gatton students are really taking college classes, which means that's more than the equivalent of an advanced placement class.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, what the Gatton Academy offers its students that other schools don't or can't.
What the Gatton Academy offers is a chance for high school juniors and seniors to take college-level classes, and so they graduate with a high school diploma and a minimum of 60 hours of college credit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think other schools, students, academically gifted students like this kind of fall through the cracks? You don't get the attention that they need to keep challenging them?
For a long time, our schools have concentrated on proficiency or grade-level learning, and that is a wonderful goal for someone who has not yet reached it. But for young people who are at that level when they start a school year or beyond, it is no goal at all to reach for proficiency. And it is very important that school leaders and decision makers and citizens speak out about the need for all children to make continuous progress, to learn new things every day. The truth of the matter, it will not help our country if we look at closing the achievement gap by taking the top students down, slowing them down, and bringing others up. We need for all children to be learning every day in school, and we need to be developing our talent.
Now, the number one ranking by Newsweek is obviously quite an honor, but what does it mean now for the future of the Gatton Academy?
Well, I think being number one at anything in the country, and, you know, I have to almost say that very slowly so that I comprehend what that means. Can you imagine how we celebrated when the University of Kentucky was number one in basketball? I would think that the state ought to be celebrating in the same way, to be number one in academics through the Gatton Academy.
Well, I'm a Louisville fan, so I didn't celebrate too much. It was back in 1986, police found the bodies of a young couple in their burned Eastern Illinois home. They'd been brutally murdered. 7 months later, Randy Steidel and another man were arrested for the crime. A year after that, the murders, Steidel was found guilty and sentenced to death. The problem was, he didn't do it. After spending 17 years on death row, he was exonerated and released from prison in 2004. He joins us now live in the studio. I don't think anyone can really imagine spending nearly two decades on death row especially for a crime they didn't commit. In fact, you've described it in the past as torture.
It was. Death row was absolute torture, knowing that the state of Illinois was intent on murdering me for a crime I did not commit.
If we can go back just a minute briefly to your arrest and the trial, how did things go so wrong back then that you and your co-defendant Herb Whitlock were found guilty in the first place?
Herb Whitlock and myself had reported the local prosecutor to the FBI 6 weeks before these murders occurred. We reported to the FBI about this state's attorney who knowingly protected drug distribution in this small town, money laundering and gambling, along with Karen Rhodes' employer. She was one of the victims in this case. And we feel that we became suspects almost immediately after the murders in order to protect organized crime element in that town and police and prosecutorial misconduct.
So then what happened to finally lead to your release from prison?
An honest state police officer reviewed the case and took to the high command that there was evidence of misconduct and that they did not prove Steidel or Whitlock guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Life without parole is an alternative sentence to the death penalty, and at least you don't risk the possibility of executing an innocent person.
Mm-hmm.
You can release an innocent man from prison, but you can't release him from the grave.
Once you first got out of prison, what was your life like having your freedom as far as reconnecting with your family, finding a job?
It's very difficult. I walked out of prison after 6,305 days into a new world. It was like being Rip Van Winkle, waking up after 20 years. I didn't know what a cell phone was, a laptop. I didn't even know how to pump gas.
Have you put your, if it's possible, put your issues of anger and resentment aside to get on with your life?
I try. I try to focus on the positive. I don't try to think about yesterday, but I have anger issues. A third of my life was stolen illegally. I had two execution dates. My family didn't deserve that. My children didn't deserve that. And anybody that goes through this experience is going to have anger issues.
Hmm. How are you doing with, have you reconnected with your family?
Absolutely. I've got four grandchildren now, and my kids are all adults. You know, I had to watch them all grow up in pictures. Yeah. So it's like starting over.